This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Police officers have long maintained a presence in public schools across the state. In their role as school resource officers, they are permanently assigned to one or more schools with the intention of providing mentorship, protection, and intervention services to students and staff. Though their presence does serve to make some feel safer, school resource officers have also been criticized for criminalizing behavior that could be resolved without arrests or referrals to juvenile criminal detention centers. And statistics show that criminalization has disproportionately affected Black and brown public school students. So as the nation continues to protest police brutality and racial violence, many advocates raise their voices for renewed conversations around school policing. Joining us now is Isa Deering, a 2020 graduate of J.D. Clement Early College High School in Durham. She's also co-founder of the Durham Youth Climate Justice Initiative. Isa, welcome to the State of Things.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Also with us, Fernando Martinez, Director of Organizing for the Education Justice Alliance in Wake County. Fernando, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you, and William Lassiter as well, Deputy Secretary for Juvenile Justice in the North Carolina Department of Public Safety and Chair of the North Carolina Task Force for Safer Schools. William Lassiter, so good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Isa, let me start with you. You grew up, you went to Durham Public Schools. What's your earliest memory of a school resource officer presence in your schools?
Sure. I mean, I had school resource officers as early as elementary school. I remember them patrolling in their uniforms, almost in an intimidating like member to myself and my friends.
Can I hold you right there, though? You say intimidating. Why was that intimidating?
I mean, my community has always held a justified distrust of government officials and people with positions in authority. So seeing an officer in uniform holding his holster in the elementary school hallway doesn't make a school climate feel safe for me.
Do you feel comfortable identifying your community when you say our community?
Yeah, I'm talking about Black and brown students.
So then that's your earliest memory, and I think I cut you off. You were about to say more, but I did want to hear why for you that was intimidating, because I know I can talk to some people who may not have felt that way. So I'm glad you explained that, and then do continue.
Sure. I remember in middle school, the school resource officer at Lucas would come from classroom to classroom, warning students against certain behaviors and expressing that these certain behaviors could result in arrest in the middle of science class. So it made school feel more policed, for sure, and just ensuring that students weren't conducting these misbehaviors and ultimately that resulting in an arrest.
And how does that make you feel sort of in the middle of science class? Because, you know, it's possibly true. It could result in arrest. But hearing that in the middle of class, what effect does that have on you?
Well, that shows what school resource officers assume of students. It shows that these behaviors are seen as criminal at 14 or 15 years old, rather than having mental health personnel intervene with some of these behaviors.
So William Lassiter, Deputy Secretary for Juvenile Justice at the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, how often do you hear student perspectives like that?
We actually have a couple of students that are on our Safer School Task Force that have expressed their concerns about school resource officers and the training that officers get. So, but I think it's very important for us to hear from young people that are experiencing those reactions to school resource officers on campus. So I thank her for speaking up and expressing her point of view. And I want to say that we hear you, and we want to address that and make sure that officers are engaging with students in an appropriate way. And if I could just say, Frank, let me give my background, my experience of when we first saw school resource officers. I was in school at Millbrook High School in Raleigh in 1993, and there was a fight that was rumored to be getting ready to occur on the campus. that afternoon. And that afternoon, young people gathered outside the school, behind the school, to get ready for that, to see that fight. They wanted to spectate and see what was going to happen. And the response from the administration at the school at the time was to tell the students, go off campus. You can do what you want, but get off campus. And so the students did that. They went right across the road to Millbrook Exchange Park, and a 21-year-old that was not involved with the school at all came to also spectate and pulled out a gun and shot my good friend Brian Green. And that incident led to, in 1993, the creation of the Center for the Prevention of School Violence. The Governor Hunt at the time also started to put in grants so that schools could start up school resource officer programs in 1993. Our school, the next week, brought an officer on campus to provide protection for young people on that campus. And I can speak from a white middle-class background, that made me feel better that there was an officer on campus to intervene if something like that was going to happen again. I can definitely see the different perspective that ISA brings, and I think it's important for us to have that conversation and talk about how can we work on the program to make it effective so that everybody on that campus feels warm, welcomed, and part of the campus in collaboration.
Well, let me bring Fernando Martinez into the conversation as well. Fernando, you're a community organizer in Wake County. Talk about what you just heard. I mean, there are times when having an armed officer, apparently, or at least it would make William Lassiter more comfortable. And who knows how that situation in his school might have turned out had there been an armed officer in the school. What's your response to that kind of reasoning about the presence of school resource officers?
Yes, definitely. Thank you for having me. And I'm sorry that a person got shot. And I recognize that that happened. And I also like to say that marketing is very effective. And the way that the system has been selling the placement of police officers in the school system is very effective and make us believe that we definitely are going to be safer in the school by the placement of this police officer in the campus, in the building. However, we need to go back in time and actually set the context of the origins of law enforcement and policing, and how that in the South have been always used to use violence against Black people and against people of color with the slave patrols, and also in the North when they used the police officers to control the strikes. So the problem of having police officers in the school building is having police officers in the school building. There's no research that demonstrate that having a police officer in the building is going to stop a school shooter, or is going to kind of reduce that level of violence. I've been asking for that research for a long time, and there is no proof that that actually happened.
Well, William Lassiter,
at least that I'm aware of.
Let me ask you about that, because unfortunately, school shootings are becoming more common. However, they are becoming more common. They don't seem to be ending. Nothing seems to have stopped the ones that happen. So do we have any research on the effectiveness of school resource armed officers on campus preventing this kind of thing?
So one of the first things that I did when I was with the Center for the Prevention of School Violence many years ago was I got a grant to study the effectiveness of school resource officers in schools for the National Institute of Justice. And we did study 20 different locations across the country where we looked at school resource officers being put into those school campuses, and what difference did they make, and what were the aspects of the program that were effective and which ones were not. And what we found from the research was that it really depends on the officer. And I think that that's probably not surprising to anybody, just like a good teacher, a good counselor, a good psychologist, a good media person. Any of those professions are defined by the people that are in those jobs and how they do those jobs. And what we found is that we did surveys actually on the campus and asked young people, did they feel safer with the law enforcement presence on campus or not? And did they feel safe to go talk to the officer in confidence about things that were going on in their life, where they needed help, where they needed advice. And those were the types of things that we took into account. And I think schools need to be doing that. We need to be talking to young people about what the role of that officer should be on the campus and how that officer's role may need to evolve to make them better at doing that job. So as far as reducing the number of actual school shootings on campus, I don't think that there's any evidence that we can specifically point to that that is true, that because of an officer's on campus that we've stopped shootings from occurring. What we can say is that the response during a school shooting has been quicker by having the officer on campus. In a lot of locations, especially in North Carolina, the response time in some of our rural schools can be 15, 20 minutes before law enforcement can get there. And we know with the types of weapons that are sold in society today that many young people could lose their life before that response got there. And that's part of the reasoning and rationale that we look at as far as response. But there are other roles that we want officers to have on that campus.
Well, let me ask Issa a question here, too. And getting back to this, you know, the effectiveness ultimately depends on the individual officer. And we'll talk about some of those other roles that officers are expected to play. But Issa, I heard you say something, and Fernando too, for that matter, that there was something essential, there was something inherent in the uniform and the gun itself that went beyond the individual who is wearing the weapon and the uniform that had a chilling effect. Did I apprehend that correctly? I mean, talk more about that and whether or not there are particular individuals who might solve this problem if they were wearing a uniform and a gun.
Absolutely. I would argue that the institution of policing is a bad institution. It's not about a few good SRO officers reaching out to mentor students. It's about the institution as a whole and what effect that institution plays on a school. In my personal experience, school resource officers for students of color have not played those mentoring roles. What we've needed was mental health counseling. We've needed substance abuse specialists, people who do not have a background in law enforcement and can really address the root cause and take preventative action against any student misbehaviors. And of course, I'm terrified of a school shooting. I mean, I grew up practicing lockdowns at school, and school resource officers honestly don't make me feel any safer. I completely agree with Fernando. There is no training that school resource officers have to handle those kinds of mass casualty situations. And though I'm afraid, and Mr. William, you're absolutely correct in the response time, that's absolutely terrifying. But again, school resource officers anecdotally don't play the heroic role in these sort of mass shooting situations. What do prevent school shootings is a preventative action effort with more mental health counselors, because the statistics show that oftentimes who's committing the school shooting is students at the school that have mental health issues. So if we can take those preventative actions, we can prevent the trauma altogether.
Well, Fernando, let me ask you about that, alternatives too, because clearly there are problems on campuses. Many of them can turn to violence, and people need to feel protected and safe. If that officer wasn't there, what are some of the alternatives that you would recommend or that you have explored?
Definitely, I can speak on the alternative, but before I was stopped, I was just going to point to two cases that have been famous of school shootings, Columbine and Parkland, Florida, where the SRO, they were SROs in those schools, and they were not successful at stopping the school shooting. As a matter of fact, the Parkland school shooting, the SRO stayed in his car and he refused to approach the shooter. Now, there is a report by the Secret Service in which they actually demonstrate that the time response for an active shooter is no different than the time that they would respond if they were coming from outside. And when we talk to police officers or SROs, some of them have told us that by training, they have been told that they're not allowed to approach an active shooter. So they, even if they are in the school building at the time, they need to wait for backup. So there is that report from the Secret Service, and I would be happy to circulate this after that. But they're not affecting our stopping that, which is one of the main arguments. when it comes to alternatives, we have been proposing, my organization, the Education Justice Alliance, have been proposing an alternative to SRO program, which is a community intervention program. By that, I mean hiring people from the community who know the students, who know the neighborhood, and train them in de-escalation techniques, train them in restorative justice, train them in relationship building. The key is to build relationship with the students. So our the Peace Builder, that's what we call it, the Peace Builder program, it is a community intervention program to help that principal and that school administrator to deal with fights or to control some of the misbehavior of the students. Because when we speak with principals, do you really need an SRO? Do you really need a police officer in the building? And they may are inclined to say yes, but when we actually go far and ask the question, do you really a law enforcement person, or do you need somebody who doesn't have the power to arrest, doesn't have the power to interrogate, doesn't have a gun, doesn't have a taser, doesn't have all these tools, do you need somebody who can help you to intervene when a fire is happening? They are actually stop and actually ask me and say, tell me more about it.
Well, let me stop you there and ask William Lasseter about that, that inherently the training of a police officer, you know, moves into one direction. I mean, you will get to the point of violence because that's what you're trained to do at a certain point. If this is looking like a violent situation, a trained police officer will move in one direction, and mental health individuals and professionals will move in a different direction. And I'm just wondering, William Lasseter, if maybe that's inherently a problem. In other words, a fundamental problem in the basic training of an officer versus some of these other intervention teams.
Well, first I'd say it's not an either-or proposition. For us, on the Safer Schools Task Force, we're recommending both, that you need to have mental health professionals. We are actually recommending increasing the number of mental health professionals through psychologists, counselors, nurses on school campuses that could provide those types of interventions that you're discussing. I do believe what you're saying is accurate, that, you know, the purpose of law enforcement is to intervene when criminal acts are occurring. And so one of the trainings that we do with our school administrators and with our teachers is, when do you call 911? And if this wasn't an incident where you would call 911 normally, why are you calling the school resource officer to be involved in this discussion or in the incident that's occurring? So that is part of the process that we're walking our teachers and our principals through now, is to make sure they understand that when you involve law enforcement, then the aspect of criminal charges that are introduced into that situation by bringing them into that incident. So I think it's a matter of training and helping staff and teachers and that law enforcement officer understand what their role on that campus is.
Fernando, I know that another important part of this discussion is not just the impression and sort of the historic mistrust between communities of color and police, but also some of the ways in which now evidence shows a racial bias, whether it's an implicit bias or an intentional bias, it's showing up in our juvenile court system. Talk just a little bit more about that.
Like I said earlier, the problem of having police in the schools is having police in the schools. And other than gun and drug-related incident, most of the things that the SROs intervene could be dealt under the student code of conduct. Police officers, because they are already placed in the school, they choose to press charges against that. Almost 50, I think it's 47% of all the juvenile court and criminal court cases are coming from the school system in North Carolina. In Wake County specifically, is 28% of all the referrals to juvenile court are coming specifically from the school system. We know from listening and talking to the students that some students are offered to be sent to a diversion program as an alternative, and they're not pressing charges. Unfortunately, that offer disproportionately leave out Black and Brown students. You can see that most of the students that are referred to criminal and juvenile court are Black students and other minority students, even though in North Carolina they make about 24% of the student population.
So, William Lasseter, what about that? I mean, we are seeing racial disparities when it comes to policing, when it comes to those referred to the court system, and whatever the reason, and we now know more about implicit bias, It's happening that way, and it's fundamental to police training to look for and identify a breach in the law and then refer to the justice system because that's how you're trained. I mean, are we at a point maybe when we're looking at these statistics that it should be paused until we can deal with some of these other issues?
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that Fernando said as far as looking at the data. He's exactly right. When you look at the number of school-based offenses that are coming into the system, it's 44% or 45% of the actual number of juvenile complaints come from school-based offenses. And it is a problem. The question is the school resource officer the reason that that problem exists? And I don't know that we know the exact answer to that, because I can tell you that of those school-based offenses, still about 25% of them are not even referred by school resource officers. There are other law enforcement officers or the schools themselves that are referring those kids to the juvenile justice system. I'll tell you a couple of the steps that we're taking. One major change that has occurred in the last year is that we now require that all school resource officers across the state have to go through the 40-hour basic training that's offered. And this basic training includes things like looking at explicit and implicit bias. That was not in place a year ago. This is a new thing that was put in place by the governor's task force and by the attorney general's office. The curriculum to the school resource officer curriculum that's being offered at basic training is being updated right now, and it's going to include a whole section on the school-to-prison pipeline to help law enforcement understand, by referring kids to the system, what that means for that kid and what it can possibly cause as outcomes for that young person in the future. I think the debate that's occurring across the state and across the country is, are you going to arm teachers or are you going to arm a law enforcement officer in schools? And my preference has always been that we need to have a trained law enforcement officer be in that role and not transform our psychologists and our mental health clinicians and our teachers and principals into people that are toting guns on those school campuses. So that's really some of the alternatives that we're looking at. But I think we're making a lot of strides. In Durham, for example, where ICE is from, we've reduced the number of school-based offenses in Durham by 50% over the last 3 years. And they're now down to the lowest rate in the state as far as school-based offenses. Only 13% are coming from schools now as far as juvenile complaints. We've taken the model that they've done in Durham now and started what's called the School Justice Partnership. We did this in Mecklenburg County and Durham County. Both of them have the two lowest rates in the state now for school-based offenses. And now we're requiring it through legislation that every school district do a School Justice Partnership where they bring law enforcement, schools, mental health clinicians to the table, and we have a conversation about how do we reduce the number of school-based offenses that are coming into the system? How do we keep the silly stuff out, the low-level offenses that are being filed on juveniles? So that's been really successful, and we've got now 28 districts across the state that have signed those agreements.
Well, let me ask Issa Deering about that. Is there room for reform and greater training? Would that solve some of this problem? Do you see that as a hopeful possibility?
Well, I tried asking for reform over a year ago, and the reforms that the Youth Justice Project asked for would include more transparency, accountability, and oversight over the school resource officer department. And Mr. Lassiter, you're absolutely right. 12% of school-based offenses, which seems like a low number, go to juvenile justice court, but I'm also concerned about any criminalization of behavior in school. When we look at the crimes, quote-unquote crimes, that are happening in schools in Durham County, is overwhelmingly simple assault and possession of an illegal substance. And I have to ask, who is criminalizing these behaviors? Simple assault means that a student may get into a fight with another student, or a student may bring in a half ounce of marijuana, and that is considered an arrestable offense for school resource officers. I'm asking if mental health counselors or substance abuse specialists would be better equipped to handle these sorts of situations. And I'm not suggesting by any means that we arm teachers, mental health professionals. In fact, I don't think guns contribute to a safe school climate at all.
Well, if it does come down to that, first of all, I'll ask you the question two ways. Are you concerned that the debate might default to that, that we'll either arm the counselors and the teachers or the SROs. And the other question is, you know, whether or not these charges that you talked about are all being brought by SROs or whether the schools themselves and outside police officers are being called onto campus. In other words, would removing the SRO really reduce, solve the problem?
100%. So to answer your first question, I believe that school resource officers are the main ones that are contributing to considering these offenses arrests. So when we think about a half-ounce possession of marijuana, teachers and school administrators are able to refer students to the misdemeanor diversion program or teen court, but it's ultimately up to the school administrators and the school resource officers in deciding what disciplinary action should be taken upon that student. And it's most oftentimes the school resource officers making those disciplinary decisions that I believe that they are not trained to make. And arming teachers and counselors, that's like training school resource officers for 40 hours and then assuming that they can't be racist anymore. I would say if you're going to train teachers and counselors, which I think is inherently a very, very bad idea, that would only contribute to people who are not qualified to perform these sort of actions in the school environment and further contribute to school unsafety. I believe that there are better qualified individuals that are not trained in law enforcement to handle these sort of behaviors. And as far as school safety goes, I believe that we should consider the most qualified individuals first.
William Lasseter, let me ask you a question. If there's any part of that you'd like to respond to, I'd be happy to give you time. But I also want to ask you another question, which is, given the perception and, again, the historic mistrust between people in uniform and communities of color, would it be best to look at this with resource officers out of the school and then begin talking about ways in which they could come back? Because it seems to me that the historic distrust is something. I wonder how you address that. As long as they're in the school and as long as there's that feeling, would there be any amount of training that could salve over that long-term wound?
Well, what I will say is, as far as the state policy is concerned, how this works in our state, in the state of North Carolina, is that local districts get to make that decision. And so the state doesn't mandate that a school resource officer has to be in a school. And so I think if a local community has that concern and ultimately thinks there's a better option or a different option that they should take, they can certainly do that. How the funding is sent to school resource officers currently in the state of North Carolina is through the line item 69 funding, which is at-risk funding for kids. And it funds one high school SRO in the state of North Carolina for every high school. And then the local district actually gets to decide if they want to spend that money in that way. What I will tell you is that many districts have chosen, obviously, to take on having those school resource officers on campus. I think it's incumbent upon those officers and the ICEs and the Fernandos of the world to sit down and let's have a conversation about how can we make this work better? How can we use this resource to be something that will help you feel safe on this school campus? And make sure that we're maintaining that integrity. I would love to have that conversation with ISA and Fernando and invite them to be part of our Safer Schools Task Force and to come and raise their concerns so that we can really think through those as we look forward about what needs to be included in the training and what types of officers, what types of qualifications are we looking for officers that are walking into those schools.
Well, I want to continue this conversation now with a policymaker, but first thank Isa Deering, a 2020 graduate of J.D. Clement Early College High School in Durham, who, by the way, will be transferring to Howard University in Washington, D.C., if everything is open and going well, as a junior. So congratulations and good luck with that, Isa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Fernando Martinez, Director of Organizing for the Education Justice Alliance in Wake County. Fernando, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm joined now, as we continue this conversation, William Lasseter will stay with us. And though these discussions, of course, are ongoing about how school resource officers can best be used, They're unlikely to be entirely removed or replaced anytime soon. State lawmaker, at least one, believes that that is a good thing. Union County Republican Representative Craig Horn is one of them. Representative Horn co-sponsored the school safety bill last year in the House. And among other things, it calls for more training for school resource officers. Representative Horn, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to talk with you.
Thanks very much for having me.
You heard a little bit about this, the description and kind of this historic mistrust about resource officers. We've seen in some cases where they're using violence. I wonder if you still feel strongly about keeping those officers in the classroom.
Yes, sir, I do. But you also mentioned about funding for additional training, and I strongly believe that we need to do a much better job and a more consistent job across the state in providing the appropriate training for our officers.
Well, what would that training involve? Because there's been so much, again, because of the disparities, and we've seen that the statistics are now compelling and really irrefutable in terms of somehow some bias is built in. And if you have somebody who is trained to look for a legal infraction, then that individual is going to go into the criminal court system. And if there's bias, that means more black and brown people are going to be in the courts. What do you say to that?
Well, I say to them that we're going to do, and we are, in fact, doing a better job now than we've ever done before, and that we will continue to improve as we learn how to better train our folks, how to provide them with the necessary resources, not just in training, but other materials so that they can properly perform their job. We listened, the North Carolina the House Committee on School Safety. We took our committee on the road, listened to folks all across the state. I remember specifically in Gaston County, we had several students come up and ask for more police resource officers in their schools, particularly in the larger schools, that they felt that they provided a sense of calm and the relationship between the students and the police officers, as I've seen in dozens of schools that I've personally visited, the relationship has been incredible. Now, that's not to say I'm not ignorant of the fact that we have some police officers that shouldn't be in the schools because of an attitude, an experience, whatever. I can say that, as you mentioned earlier in the program, or was mentioned earlier in the program. We have the same problem with teachers and principals, and we have the same problem in business. Not everybody that's in a profession should be in that profession, and we need to help those people find another way to make a living. But in a broader sense, school resource officers have provided an incredible level of or sense of security in the schools amongst the students as well as the teachers and administrators and the parents.
Well, I wonder what parents. You say about that, parents in school, but at the same time, they've also provided, and you've heard this, and I think if you've been around the state, obviously you've heard other people say it, that for certain communities, they provide a sense of insecurity, fear, and trauma. So there are communities that feel safer, and there are those that don't. And then there's no compelling evidence to show that things are actually safer because they're there. So in the absence of proof that they're doing it, then the subjective feeling of safety, when it cuts both ways, do you continue to put those officers, you know, in that position? Let me ask you that question another way. So I want to ask about that because there are communities that feel both ways. But whether or not, you know, William Lasseter talked about response time. And if the shooting starts, you want a quicker response time to end the catastrophe and the pain. Do you think the training will come in time to keep more children who should not be in the juvenile justice system out? How many more children will get into that system that shouldn't as we ramp up our training?
Well, the goal of school resource officers is to reduce the number of kids that enter the juvenile justice system, not to increase it. The goal is crime prevention, not crime adjudication. By helping our police officers and our students engage in more productive conversations, learning the challenges that each has with the other, learning the challenges that each has in our society and our community, I think will enhance the relationship between police and the public.
William Lasseter, let me ask you, and I don't have too much time for this, but whether or not you're exploring restorative justice as any piece of this.
Absolutely. In fact, even in our juvenile justice facilities now, we are doing restorative circles with our juveniles. But restorative justice is underway in many counties across the state of North Carolina, and it's being added to the SRO curriculum as a strategy that they should pursue with young people.
Let me ask you another question that did come up during our research. William Lasseter, I'll ask you, and that is a perception that there, in some cases, that the SRO, this is punishment for them. If they've somehow not performed quite well enough on the police force, they get assigned to this as a kind of disciplinary action.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we looked at when we were looking at, when we studied SROs a while back, was that it used to be when SROs were first being assigned to schools that we found that it was almost a form of discipline in some of those jurisdictions, that sheriffs or police chiefs would push those officers that didn't do well on the street to a school, which makes absolutely no sense. And I think that police chiefs and sheriffs across the state now have come to the realization you really want to have your best officer at a school, because they've got to do problem solving and decision making that's at a higher level than most law enforcement. They're constantly dealing with young people that are impulsive, that make bad decisions, and their role there is to shepherd them in the right direction.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program. William Lasseter is Deputy Secretary for Juvenile Justice, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, and Chair of the North Carolina Task Force for Safer Schools. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Representative Craig Horn from Union County. Craig Horn, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Frank.
You can find out more about our program at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.